This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Friday, September 23rd, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. And once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for today as we have a conversation about the marital rape conversation again. Again, I brought my guests who were with me on Wednesday, and we're going to continue that discussion and go in detail because I have some more questions which I wasn't too quite sure about. But before we do that, we are again celebrating Mr. Williams. Bring that back up again, please, on the phone. We are going to have a conversation. Okay. About International Men's Day, right? And we have Mr. Denver Pratt and Mr. David Williams, who is in studio today, and where they're going to be hosting a march and rally on September 24th, which is going to be on Christie Park, right? So I want to have a conversation on what is... go ahead. We can hear you loud and clear. And I want to have a conversation on exactly what is that about. First of all, what is International Men's Day? I see that around, and I see it's being promoted, and I see you all attach yourself to that for this Men's and Boys March. Yeah. So I just want to briefly explain that, and then what is the vision of this rally and march?
Okay, I'll talk about International Men's Day first. The now Prime Minister, who was leader of the opposition, was traveling in the Caribbean, mm-hmm. and he saw the sign up say International Men's Day. So him and the chairman, now chairman again of the PLP, which was the opposition then, and they said, why don't we have an organization like this in the Bahamas? They gave the charge to Mr. Keith Cox, who was then president of the PLP, and Terence Bethel, the late Terence Bethel. And they said, now, form a committee as such in the Bahamas, but make it non-political. Terence Bethel contacted me because he knew I was always involved in men's ministry. The three of us met. And therefore, the International Men's Day Bahamas Committee was formed. The vision of the march was Denver Pratt. I can let him speak on that.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Pratt. Exactly what is the vision of this march and rally and the objective? Because I see it look like you have the entire Bahamas coming out come Saturday.
Well, good morning to you, C.A. Nuri, and it's good to be on your show, and good morning to the Bahamas at large. Yes, this initiative with the Men's Day March is a vision that I had, because concerning all of the different crimes that is happening in our country, and we see that is wrecking havoc in our cities, in our communities. And so I decided to see how we can do something about this crime situation. So I decided to rally with the troops and say, hey, let's bring the men of the nation together. The reason I say the men of the nation together from all aspects is because the men are the head of the home. The men are the head in different organizations. When you look at the religious organizations, the men are the head. When you look in government, the men are the head. So it starts with us. We're not saying that our sisters are going to be on the side. sidelines. We love our sisters because it says behind every good man, there's a great woman. So we in support of our sisters. But we believe that if we're going to do anything with this crime situation in our country, I know we cannot stop the crime, but we can probably reduce it. It has going to start with the men. So what we're doing is we're having a march and we're calling all men from all aspects of this country and organization. This is simply dealing with crime. Enough is enough. I believe just yesterday we had a murder. Someone's life got taken, and previous days before that, it seems like every other day we having a murder, somebody being stabbed, shoot to death or something. So something has to be done. So we calling all the men, and we're going to be marching from Christie Park and onto Ponciana, and then we going on to Blue Road and come back to Meadow Street and end up back to Christie Park. And we are going to have a short rally, and we just going to be saying enough is enough.
And I see you keep on mentioning the word for phrase, enough is enough. What does that mean exactly?
That means is because when you look at our society today, Mr. Nuri, it seems like every other day we have a murder. Mm-hmm. Every other day, somebody look like their life is being taken away. So we want to say to the men that if you can get together in your community, and you, let me give you an example. If you have 50 to 100 men get in their community and says to the individuals who are wreaking havoc and says, hey, look here, we're not tolerating that no more. Enough is enough. And they would look at that and say, okay, 50 men or 100 men come into my community and say enough is enough. Because what happening is we need now to direct the energy of these young men in a positive way. I believe that what is lacking, Mr. Nuri, in our communities is good mentorship. See, a lot of our young men are being driven by negativity. So, and give you an example. The guy in the hood who be dealing the drugs, he is a businessman. He is an entrepreneur. What we want to do is we want to take that and transform that into the right way. And only thing we want to instill in him is he has to change his product. You see what I'm saying?
So I'm gathering that this is going to be like a men's rally, that no woman is going to be here?
Well, women is going to be there. We're focusing on the men. We want to get the men. See, Miles Monroe said something, Mr. Nuri, the late Miles Monroe. So goes the men, so goes the country. So we can get the men together. That means the whom going to be together. And if the whom going to be together, that means the society is going to be together. And if we can get society together, that means the country, it starts with us. We taking leadership. We saying, okay, we drop the ball. We going to rally now. We going to talk about this thing. We going to sing and strategize how we can do something to make this thing change and move. So it's going to start with all of the men in Nassau underneath the sound of my voice. We need you to be to Christie Park sharp 2 p.m. so we can say enough is enough. If you a man and you have children and family and you say you tired, I think you need to be there not only for your children and your family, but the neighbors next to you, the neighbors down the road from you. It start with us. So we see communities, if you're in a community and crime is happening in your community, either you are part of the problem, you're part of the solution. So we call in all men to get on board so we can change this thing moving forward.
Mr. Williams, I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
Any civic groups going to be invited?
Yes. You have a number of persons, groups, as a matter of fact. We extended an invitation to the Rastas, to the Lodges, the Boys Brigade has committed, the Scouts has committed. But even more than that, we have gotten commitment from the Urban Renewal and the police. They'll be there providing the security. The Defense Force Marching Band will be there along with about 50 of their officers. The Prison Band will also be there along with their officers. And the Bahamian Pastime, Junkanoo, Augusta Street and Meadow Street is where the Junkanoo groups will line up. It will be a combined Junkanoo group. So they will line up after as the march past Augusta Street. They will come in the back of the march and they will rush from Augusta Street and Meadow Street all the way to Christie Park.
Man, this sounds exciting, man. It's an event to come to.
We want all of our men. We want the ladies on the sidelines, or if they want to join us with their sign up. I support the men. You know, enough is enough. Men leading by example. So this is what we're calling on the women. But I also want to thank our partners. I spoke with Mike Russell from the Rotary. He heard me on Guardian Radio. He called me. Dave, Rotary East would like to be a part of this. We like what you're doing. Mm-hmm. They committed to supplying, along with their partner, I think it's Aquapure, 30 cases of water.
Nice.
That's plenty water for the marchers. That's free. Mm-hmm. Coca-Cola came on board. Denver and I just came from Coca-Cola before we came to the station. Mm-hmm. They supply cases of water. And there are many other partners who wish not to be named. There's Prison Fellowship Bahamas. Mm-hmm. There's the Brotherhood led by Dr. Carlos Reed. Mm-hmm. There's GRIP led by Apostle Henry Higgins. I mean, and there are so many organizations coming together.
Sound like it could be hundreds or 200 hundreds. It could be out there.
Our goal is we can bring 10,000 men together. Now, some people say, well, Dave, why march? Like Denver said, we want to highlight, focus the fact that these are positive men. We are example. Dr. P called the show this morning. I agree. We're encouraging men to get back to the family. Mm-hmm. It starts from a family. It starts from... So if all of us as men that be the leaders in our family, whether you're single, divorced, widow, whatever it is, as men, as males, we can lead these children. And if you don't have a male child in particular, adopt a child. Be a mentor for a child. So if we as men can take the lead, get back to the family, because it has to start in the family. So we can become surrogate, or I can't use surrogate. We can be stepfathers, whatever fathers we are. Mm-hmm. The point is, as men, we want to be the leaders. Let us start from the family, and this situation will turn around.
Just to add to that thing, also, too, I believe we have about 20 schools that's going to come.
Yes, that's correct.
And
yes.
Yeah, the boys is going to come and join the march, because it's very important for our young men to see what positivity is all about. One of the things, Mr. Nuri, if I can, why I'm so excited and passionate about this march, being someone who came from the system, I've been locked up in the state for 136 months for drug charges. I got caught with almost $500,000 worth of cocaine and went to trial, and the judge gave me 136 months, which is equivalent to about 11 years and 6 months. Mm-hmm. So during my time in prison, before I went to trial, I stayed in the county jail, and something happened that transform my life. I could remember my mother told me when I was young, she died from cancer at an early age, and she told me, she said, Denver, if you ever get yourself in trouble, I want you to call on the name of God. I did that, nothing happened, until one day a prison guard saw three of us in the jail cell in the United States waiting to go to trial, reading the word of God. And he came in and opened the cell and asked us a simple question, and that question was, are you guys saved? So we said no. From 1999 to now, a prison officer led me to Christ. I haven't looked back. I'm not perfect, but I serve a perfect God. And from then, God said, I'm going to allow you to get in this mess so I can give you a message. So when you go back home, I want you to go into the schools. I want you to go into the prisons where I connected with Prison Fellowship and go into Maximum and speak to those in Maximum, in Medium. And I also traveled with Prison Fellowship to Guyana, Trinidad, and Barbados, where I had an opportunity to speak in several prisons and the youth camps, telling them the importance of making the right choices. So what I decide to do, Mr. Nuri, is I decide to put it in a book. And my book is called From Prison to Purpose, The Denver Pratt Story. So I can tell the young man that, hey, I made the mistake, that you don't have to go down this road. Life is all about choices.
Yes.
And the choices that you make can end up, you can end up in a place that you don't want to be. So we're really excited about this. We're tagging it in the man, and we're letting them know, hey, you need to be involved, and it's important about making the right choices.
And I see I have a caller here, and I want to call and engage you before we go to the next segment. Go ahead, caller. Producer, put the caller through. Can you hear me, caller? Hello? Can you hear me, caller?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear now.
Yes. You know, we love to talk about programs for the youth, right? These poor, uneducated youths, right? And see, that's an issue. You see, we don't have the same problem with those other youth. You know, I have two sisters. They lost their husbands when their children were like, they got, both of them got two children. They lost their children when their father they were at the age of four and under, right? Now, and all of those, one sister, her son is a doctor. The other one is a teacher, a young teacher, and studying online to further her education, right? See, these sisters, one sister is a doctor, one is a master, one is a former permanent secretary. You understand me? The permanent secretary, she have an adopted daughter from Camp Road in her house. She have a family in her house. You understand me? So, see, we got to address the needs of these families, not just the son. We got to address the needs of the mother. I do construction, right? I train youth. You understand me? I have youth who come to my work, the job, And the people that employ me, they don't want to pay them a livable wage. When these same youth, they go home and sell drugs in the evening. Hello?
I'm here, I'm listening.
And seeing that CVV, and these same guys, you say, you got a guy on your panel and say he used to do drugs, and we got the scooter and the read them. These people don't even live in these communities, and these people live behind gates and things. You understand me? We gotta do something for these kids. We gotta give these kids a livable wage. That's what we need to march for, a livable wage for these kids.
Lewis?
Not a minimum wage of $250, a livable wage that the experts at the University of the Bahamas say that is $650 a week in Nassau.
Mr. Lewis, I appreciate your contribution.
So we gotta stop beating around the bush and stop making these people ritual with these programs and things. We don't need that.
Okay, then. And thank you very much for that. But I want to know the route. I know you're starting on Christie Park. Where is Christie Park exactly?
That's right on Nassau Street. So right up here from the Guardian, opposite the old Taxi Union Hall. And so we head south on Nassau Street.
Uh-huh.
Then we go, we would call that east onto Ponciana Drive. So you make that left onto Ponciana Drive. When you end at Ponciana Drive, then you turn back north on Blue Hill Road.
Okay.
When you head north on Blue Hill Road, then you go back west on Meadow Street, and then back to the park.
And you mentioned the word rally. What do you mean by rally?
Well, shortly after we have ended, we are going to have a short rally in terms of just talking. We have a number of persons who will be the leader of the opposition. There's expected to be a number of other government officials who will address the rally.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the Commodore of the Defense Force, Dr. Raymond King.
Mm-hmm.
We should have a representative, I think it's Chief Superintendent Campbell from the police. He'll address on behalf of the Commissioner Clayton Fernando.
Mm-hmm.
And there should be a representative from the prison on behalf of Commissioner Dawn Clare. So they'll be addressing the rally, and we'll have a youth speaker,
mm-hmm.
young person, who will share their experiences.
Okay, I have one more call, and I just want you to summarize when and where again. Okay, Mr. Pratt? Okay, patch the caller through. Go ahead, caller. Go ahead, Raymond.
We need justice, law, and order in this country. I against what other brothers saying about March, right? But that's not going to solve the problem. What's going to solve the problem is getting in the communities where these crimes are happening, where those people that are doing crimes live, okay? You need to get in the community and speak to them, because marching ain't going to help. They're not coming out there. They're trying to, either they're hiding or they're trying to make themselves some money. So marching right now is a cop-out, and the politicians know some of those guys. Get in the community and speak to them. You got parks on the communities, right? You got churches. You got sidewalks. I sure to get in the communities with a mic. They would hear you, what you're saying, and probably change their ways, but ain't nothing happening with any march.
Thank you very much, Bremen.
What I want to say to you, Bremen, unfortunately you did not know, but from last year, we were in the communities up to Wednesday past. So from last year up to Wednesday past, every Wednesday we go into the communities in the inner city where we talk with young men. We offer prayer, and we've sat down and talked with young men, encouraging them. And we also have a partnership with BTVI.
Mm-hmm.
So BTVI will be out there tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We'll be encouraging as much young men as possible to sign up, because the challenge is, when we met with the PM, he challenged us, how do we get more boys and men in education? Mm-hmm. And so we form a partnership with BTVI, who will be out there offering free opportunities for these same young men. So to answer you, Brayman, yes, from last year, we were in the communities talking with young men. Every Wednesday, we do that.
And before Mr. Pratt comes and explain again, summarize the date and the time and everything, how long have you been doing these marches? Go ahead. Go ahead.
This will actually be the second time we marched. The original march was in 2018, mm-hmm. when we began. We left from the Southern Recreation Grounds and we marched to Awaki.
Okay.
This will be the second time we do a national march.
Okay, and Mr. Pratt, remind everybody.
Again, we are calling all of the men in Nassau, wherever you coming from, Gambier, out east, over the hill, Beantown, Pinewood, Flamingo Gardens, whatever, wherever you is. If you say you is a man, we asking all of you to come on tomorrow. It starts at 2 p.m. sharp. We're going to be taking off from Christie Park, and we're going to be heading down at Ponciana, and then we're going on Bluer Road and then come to Meadow Street and come right back at Christie Park. So we're going to be sharp at 2 p.m., and this just is a start. One of the things in order for anything to happen is we have to make sure that the men come together first, and Mr. Nuri, is not necessarily a march that I like to call it. This can probably be something where we call it a movement, mm-hmm. because we don't want it to stop here. We want to have an initiative. We want to have programs that go into every community where the men spare the programs, where the men be mentors of these kids, and so we can steer them in the right direction. You hear Dave talk about how we started this from last year. We've been in and out the communities. One thing I always say, Mr. Nuri, if you're not a part of the solution, you're probably a part of the problem. We're asking you to be a part of the solution.
We do have a national plan. I always hear to talk about a plan, and this plan was presented to the Prime Minister about a month ago. So we do have a national initiative to address the challenges with the boys and the men. I want to give a special shout-out to Mr. Nuri Alam. I went to CC Sweeting. We're called the Big Dollhouse when I was in there. We now have a gala ball actually planned next week, Saturday, honoring who of all two persons? The Commissioner of Police, Clayton Fernando, and the Commodore of the Defense Force. This is the first time in this country two persons from a government school have ascended to the top posts, law enforcement in this
school.
CC Sweeting, yes, in this land.
Yes,
and
sir.
When we were at school, we were known as the Big Dollhouse. Nothing good. The question, can any good thing come out of CC Sweeting? And I stand here along with the Commissioner Clayton Fernando, the Commodore, Dr. Raymond King, and many others, and say, yes, I did.
Okay, that's tomorrow, September 24th at Christie Park, 2 p.m. It's going to be a march and a rally, and they want everybody to come over.
All the men.
Right? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So we'll take our first commercial break right now as we go into our next segment. But thanks very much for coming by, and I'll definitely be out there tomorrow, and I'm going to take advantage of those free water.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Have a wonderful day. We come right back.
Thank you.
Insurance, peace of mind.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio in the AM with C.A. Nuri. And we're going to continue our conversation. Our conversation is going to be about marital rape. And we wanted to share a different perspective. We wanted to share a different perspective of the average woman. And particularly in this particular case, we have white bohemians. I wanted to know their perspective on this. And I'm hoping to facilitate a show with bohemian men and how they view this marital rape. And I got some points I wanted to read onto the record and have my guest host, Catherine, and her niece, Maria, to respond to. And I wanted to bring into light the definition of rape, right? And the proposed new definition of rape. And that's why I wanted to start the conversation. I know last time we were here, I was asking, what about duress and being forced or blackmailing to having sex, and how does that relate to this marital rape bill? But let me just read the definition. Where is that? So the proposed bill is going to be to change Section 3, right? And they have a definition of rape. Rape is the act of a person having sexual intercourse with someone over the age of 14 who is not his spouse without their consent of the other person. And they say his, without not being the spouse, and say his. So it's a marital rape. I mean, rape involves a woman, it seems. And the change would be, the proposed change would be, rape is the act of any person not under the age of 14 having sexual intercourse with another person without having consent of that person, where he knows the person does not give consent or is reckless as to the person's consent. And I wanted to discuss that, right? Because the proposed bill also went into some definitions, right? And it mentioned duress and trickery type thing. And I wanted to discuss that, right? One of my issues and concern is the definition of rape. What constitutes rape? And they basically said rape is a lack of consent. And they went in detail of what consent is. They expressed consent, saying it definitely, yes, I agree. And my concern is this. Once upon a time, when you got married, or this is what the church is proposing, that's an automatic consent there. Right. And I know, right, in couples that at times, a married man and a married woman in any event can come home late at night, and they initiate sexual intercourse whilst their spouse is, in quotes, sleeping. Right. And my concern is, if they initiate sexual intercourse whilst their spouse sleeping, which is a common thing with married people, right? There was no express consent.
surely that person did not rape their spouse, because the consent came at the marriage vows. So that's what I was concerned with. And then I'm going to pull it up so I could read this section also, where it says that rape also involves duress, where if you blackmail the person to say that if you do not have sex with me, you won't get access to this money, or threats of death, or being induced in terms of alcohol or drugs, that also constitutes rape. And I want to know if this reference of rape also constitutes in this marital rape, right? If I and my wife, me and my wife are having issues and we're rowing, right? And I'm to tell her point blank, hey, you asked me for all this money, I'm not giving you not a cent until you do your womanly duties or wifely duties to me, right? And Ken, she said, man, you are treating me as if you're trying to rape me. I'm going to complain. And I'm concerned. I'm concerned about that in regards to the matrimonial bed. And that's where I'm going to start my conversation. Did anyone consider that? Was that a part of the conversation regarding men who just say, man, no, this is my wife. I come home and I'm tired and I want to go to sleep. So my wife understands that and she should make herself available.
Thank you for your essay of a question and for having us back on the show to talk about these things. I am not a legal counsel. If anyone has legal knowledge specific to this and wants to call in and weigh in, please do so. We would love to hear the best and the brightest talking about these things. We must talk about them. What I heard you saying is that, and I heard the specifics of the specific situation you put forward, but what I heard you saying is that we're afraid that sex could be used as a weapon. We're afraid, and again, I love that you always qualify the show is that I like to have a different point of view. I'd like to have like the white female and the implication is privileged point of view come across. And I would say, of course, we have voices that are different on the subject because we must. Of course, we have differences in education, color, class, experience. I mean, I was just reading Sidney Poitier's Measure of a Man this morning, getting ready for the release of the film on him today. And, you know, less than only 150 years ago, scant 150 years ago, it was not legal for black people to own land in this country. The reason his family owned land was because there were no records of his family owning land within Cat Island. They had to go to the church and have people swear that it was in their care to keep, it was in their care for a certain amount of time. What I'm saying is that, of course, we come from different histories. And with that, there's different perspectives expected. But that is not what this is about. This is not about the sanctity of marriage when you're implying that once I'm married, there's irrevocable consent and that the marriage is sacred under the church. That's not what this is about, because though we believe you are one flesh of one flesh within a Christian church, and I do come from a Christian standpoint, we also believe there must be justice. And often, I say, Sia, you've often quoted the church when you said the church says this, the church says that. The church must be the voice of all practicing Christians, not just a couple of bishops
the majority
that
of the
have
people.
Said they haven't heard women. If you haven't heard women, then I would say, as a bishop, open your ears, because their cries are valid. And this is but you're basically saying, can sex be weaponized?
But Catherine,
yeah.
You said you question whether it's the consent of the whole church or the whole people. We had a referendum on this. We had the majority of people already said, no,
Was the referendum sanctified?
But my point is, the majority of the Bohemian people spoke. This is a done deal. Okay. We've then concluded on
and
it.
And I'm going to make my cousin David happy when I quote Thomas Sowell, the economist, the African-American economist and intellectual, that says, it doesn't matter if Johnny can read. It doesn't matter if Johnny can think. It matters that he thinks what he's feeling is thinking. It doesn't matter what our opinion is about this. There has to be truth. We believe there is truth because we have created a constitution and we've created law. And under the law, whatever else we believe, we all must be equal. That's the point of the law. At the moment, we are not all equal under the law. This is what we're talking about. I've had so many men come up to me after the last show, and because it's easy to find people who agree with you as an educated woman. But there's so many men, and I've heard women who say that, why would you say that? This is unchristian. We're under attack. Sex can be weaponized. You can't prove that. And the thing is, it is true. Sex is being weaponized within our country. It's icing out relationships. It's being told that to our young girls that this is your only value. Use this and reproduce with this. That's how you'll count, and that's how you'll make money in society. It's being used as a threat that I will withhold this from you, or I will use it against you to get you in trouble. That's true. But that doesn't discount the fact that rape is rape and heinous and must be something that we're legally protected against. These are that we're using all the great dividers to have this conversation, saying you can't know this because we're not the same. But the law needs to be the great unifier. It needs to be where we can all find equal footing. That's all that the people that are pushing for this are asking for, that unmarried women and married women are treated equally under the law, that they have the equal protections that are necessary despite what misuse there can be. As we said last show, a child can falsely accuse an adult of doing a sexual harm to them. There still has to be laws that protect children against sexual abuse. Can this be one of my law student cousin Paul said, you know, that it's hard to prove rape in any case. Within marriage, certainly, but still in any case. Does that mean we don't have the law because it might be hard to prove? You want to say something?
I see I have a caller here. Let me pass the caller through so we have some conversation. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me, caller? Hello? It seems as if I lost them, so I'll read this. It says, this is section 4. Insertion of a new section 3A into the Principal Act. The Principal Act is amended by inserting into the Principal Act the following as section 3A. 3A provisions applicable to consent in sexual offenses and indecent assault. A person shall not be deemed to have given consent to sexual intercourse or indecent assault where the consent is extorted by threat or fear of bodily harm to the person or to another person. So I understand that you can't be threatening people or that be considered rape. Obtained by impersonating the spouse or other person personally known to the person. I understand you can't pretend that you're the husband or you pretend that you're the person's lover of some sort. C, expressed by words or conduct of another person. Induced by abusing a position of trust, power, or authority. E, given by a person originally but withdrawn by express words or conduct and not replaced by any agreement to engage in sexual intercourse or any indecent assault. That means that a woman can change their mind, a woman can change their mind anytime. Obtained by administering a substance without person's consent, capable of causing or enabling the person to be stupefied, put to sleep, and or overpowered at a time or of the sexual intercourse or indecent assault. Obtained by a pattern of behavior which has the effect on that person coercing, see, this is where I get concerned, coercing, controlling, exploiting, or limited access to financial resources. Mm. See, and my money is my money. Mm. See, this is where all this has come back to this financial coercion and lack of or limited access. I can't believe my wife could be say, hey, I've taken all your money and access to your money, and she can't give me sex. No, see, I can tell you, no, miss. The money comes with your wifely duties. And if you're not performing any wifely duties, you're not getting access to my money. And if you're going to force and go in my wallet and take my money out of my wallet, guess what could happen at night, right? And see, I'm being facetious with this. And this is where I think a number of persons are concerned. They understand that the violent person who's slapping down their wives and abusing them physically, that they deserve some sort of punishment. But this section of law, talking about finances and that you cannot say force your wife through finances, blackmail, right? Yeah. I'm kind of uneasy with it because it's my money.
And I think this is where I hear the threat towards the male population come in. And I so appreciate the men that came on earlier and their tremendous work in the Bahamian community. And I heard them speaking to the fact that the man should be the head of the household. In the Christian tradition, this is true. And I invite all men to step up and take that role. I think we touched on this on Wednesday, and I said, well, then will the man be providing for the wife? Will she be safe? Will she be financially secure? And you said, certainly. I said, well, exchanging money for sexual favors at you, which is the oldest profession, which is prostitution. But what I'm hearing is one of the men who called last week, he said, shame on you, you should feel shame. And I'm like, ah, when people dictate this, they feel threat, they feel fear, they feel vulnerable. So the men that are responding to this and saying, this makes me feel vulnerable, this is not a legal problem, this is a relationship problem. When the gentleman on earlier saying, we support men, women, boys, we support the family. The family in the Bahamas is under attack. When we hear this law come through, we say, this is an attack on the family. No, no, no. This is a protection of the family, the true family as it should exist. The true family as it should exist should be healthy, balanced, whole, and having nothing, no kind of abuse within. No one coming from any kind of Christian perspective is going to say it's okay for one member of a family, whatever their gender or position, can hurt physically another member of the family. There has to be a law to make sure that's okay. Okay. However, what I think we're worrying about is the relationship issues happening in this country, and they're tremendous. We see the violence daily in our newspapers. We hear about the call for programs and the direction for parenting of our young people. I have to drop this here because I'm so proud of it. We see the need for it, which is why Ranfurly has opened the second phase of their transitional home yesterday, because there are young people unguided and lost going out there into unhealthy relationships with poor skill sets. But all of that aside, these fears aside, can't take away the fact that there is a truth. The truth is we need to protect vulnerable people against violent abuse, and so this law needs to take place. If you're afraid that this will be misused, then let's talk about that in a relationship way. Why are we in relationships in which we are so afraid of our spouse?
Marriage is a relationship. Yep. And that is not what we're not talking about.
You know,
I know I have some calls, and I'm trying to squeeze them in.
Go, go.
So I'm going to squeeze them in.
I'll be quiet.
And I find that when we speak in law and legalese, you're confusing the number of men who are expressing their concern about their relationship, saying that the law is now getting involved inside their relationship.
The intimate side of that's the fear.
And nobody wants to discuss it. They get dismissed automatically. And that's their concern, to, hey, you're getting in my personal business. Mm-hmm. And this is what me and my wife does. And then you're creating a law that is kind of ambiguous in certain aspects, right? Especially that financial thing, right? Especially when I think I have expressed consent. And then no one wants to hash that part out. But let me speak to the people who are whole. Go ahead, caller. Caller, can you hear me? I'm doing well, but you got to speak up for me.
Okay. I have a quick question. How do you prove? I'm going to give an instance. This is off the top of my head. Let's say me and my wife are having a problem, or we have some property together or something. So, and she, me or her, are conniving and say, guess what, I want to own the house or whatever. I can trump up some charge on her. How do I prove that I didn't, like we went to bed, had sex or whatever, and the next morning I let the police come to the house and she say, I rape her. Now, yeah, they could find my DNA because obviously that's my wife. What provisions they can put in for these type of, you know, because like you say, I agree with the lady and I agree with all ladies. Mm-hmm. I have four daughters. I don't want nobody playing around with them. If you're married or not, you can have a problem with me. But then the same time is, how do I prove that I ain't do this? Like being a vendor, had sex. They have any provisions and that? That's what I'm saying. Like, this thing too broad. I mean, I understand. They have to have some kind of recall for people who are abusive, are using all these trickery and stuff to get their way. But then at the same time, how I can prove or disprove that this happening? Like, you know what I mean? Like, so I think they have to really sit down, define what they're proposing, and then present it to us.
Yeah, hash it out for us. Yes. Thank you very much, Colin.
And I completely agree. I feel terrified for the men that might be vulnerable too. And for my brothers, for my future son, that I don't want them put in a situation where their life could be completely altered falsely because of someone saying, you know, he did this to me last night. So absolutely has to be safeguards, provisions, protocols put in that make sure that this isn't something that in a casual accusation ends a man's life.
Okay. I have another caller there. Go ahead, caller. Caller, you're on. Can you hear me? The caller is there.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead, caller.
Hello?
I can hear you loud and clear.
If you'd like to make...
Okay, that wasn't going. Are all the boards clear?
And we say, and one of the things we say is, how do we prove it? When attorney Lisa Boswick-Dean called in on Wednesday, she went into great detail explaining, like, now when this case shows up into a police station, when you see the brutality, the injuries to certain parts of the bodies, when you can document that, that is something that we have to then be able to have the legal stand to defend, to have the rights to stand by that victim and say, okay, we have the power of the law behind us to protect this person. As far as the casual accusation, I hear the fear in the men. I have friends, I work with so many men that some of their relationships, I'm like, oh my goodness, how do you survive these? And so, and CA keeps coming back to the finances. How will my finances...
My money is important to me.
No, but I think it's important to everyone. I think one of the reasons we feel fear is because one of the last bastions of power is... within the Bahamas legally is a marriage in which a man can feel safe, powerful, and protected. One of the reasons they feel emasculated and disempowered in the country is widespread financial insecurity. And so when you feel like your finances, however many zeros you have behind your bank account, are at risk, it is a terrifying thing. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of concerned about my money, you know, especially if I'm charged for something and they get access to my money, and imagine me paying alimony for the rest of my life to a woman where I cannot get anything in return. And that should be discussed. But I see I have another caller right here.
CA, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good morning to your guests as well.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. As usual, very interesting conversation. Unfortunately, you know, and if you really, really go into the communities and listen to the various conversations even surrounding this matter, you're going to find out right now you're absolutely correct. Marriage is one of the very last bastions that men do feel empowered, that they are leaders of their homes, as well as they feel the power to protect and provide for their wives as best manner as possible. The sad reality here is that marriages today, it seems to be a business transaction. Because a lot of them, if the man can't fully provide, even though he's trying his best to provide, and the sex is being withheld, it causes a problem. And vice versa. If a woman is not doing, from a man's standpoint, is not doing what he feels that she should be doing as a wife, then, too, it causes a friction. So, you know, in essence, what I'm saying here is simply this. I mean... Now you're moving from one paradigm to the next, because now you're getting into the personal lives of the individual. And like the previous caller said, if one should sleep with their wife and the wife jumps up, and this is the biggest fear with men, because we see that men are also under attack from many angles. This is just, to many men, just another angle that's going to be used.
Right.
It's going to be weaponized, and they're very much afraid. And I hope that the persons who are really... not necessarily say pushing the narrative, but pushing this narrative takes into account that men are also fearful of what also can come, because it's going to be a life-altering situation to be locked up on a false, trumped-up charge if it comes down to that. So there are concerns. But CA, thanks for taking my call, and very interesting conversation, and let's keep it going. Thanks for taking my
Excellent.
Call again.
And let me ask Maria, who is an 18-year-old here, and I know I didn't include her in the conversation, and my question is basic, right? What type of man are you looking for in a husband? And I want it in terms of emotional support, and I want to know how that in terms of an exchange for a sexual relationship, and I'm not talking about a sexual relationship for you, I'm just talking about what type of man... For how that tit.
As Maria's dad keels over and dies. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was trying to make it more PG as best I can. But go ahead.
No, let's see. Well, I have a personal rule that I'm going to confess that I'm not planning to get married or look for a husband until after college. But when I do think about a good man to marry, I think of someone who's going to support, respect me, and someone I can also support and respect. Otherwise, I'm not entirely sure yet. I am not very experienced with dating due to COVID, as you may guess. But
When you see the qualities of a man, well, look at your qualities of a man within a home. What would you say that you think is something that makes you feel safe or not within your home environment? What are some of the qualities of like a father figure? that you would think that might be a good husband in the future?
Well, perhaps somebody who loves children, or at least is a patient man who knows how to respect personal space at the same time as know when he's needed.
And I appreciate that, because that's what one of the arguments the women are saying, that a man, a patient man, a kind man, a loving husband would never abuse his wife no matter what. No.
And I would prefer a Christian man as well.
Well, I think well, the whole country needs great prenup training, which could save a lot of the issues. Mm-hmm. But I think, I mean, the last caller, I feel the points. I think they're true. I think I worry for the validity of them. But I don't think this law is trying to control the minutiae of the relationships between a husband and wife. Again, going back to that definition of a rape victim as described in our last radio show that talks about trauma, brutality, extreme duress, there has to be safeguards for that. As far as that which happens within a relationship, I mean, the Christian ideal, which would declare that a husband and wife are of one flesh, but also that the wife is loved as in the church, that she's loved with the Christian definition of love, which is kindness, forbearance, patience. That in that way, if the husband wants to lead the household, and not everyone in the Bahamas does ascribe to Christian views, but that definition of a man, if that's maintaining a household, I think that we won't have the kind of situations of women just deciding they're going to ruck up with false rape charges. I think we have to still have, despite all of this, despite whatever we believe, despite whatever we feel, there still is a truth. And the truth is that physical harm to any person, towards another person within any relationship, sanctified or otherwise, has to be protected by law. This is what we're seeking to put in place here. Again, I'm not a lawyer, but I do speak from a Christian standpoint. I have every respect for men, and I do worry about the protection and the threat towards our young men. As many men are abused in this country as women. Okay. And that is something that's harder to prove than rape in marriage in some cases.
And I have 30 seconds for this caller now. Caller, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
You have 30 seconds, actually.
Well, listening to this debate, no one is... I haven't heard anyone prefer any reason as to why the male would wish to have a release. Why would the man want to have intimate relationship with his partner? I think if the woman decides she doesn't want to satisfy her husband, she says no, I accept that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think generally, to make this easier for all and sundry, then we need to remove adultery from the matrimonial causes, so that if the wife says no, the husband can then seek release elsewhere.
Okay, thank you much, caller. And we'll discuss that too, because we're going to have some men come on and actually express their concerns, right? But this has been Guardian Radio in the AM. I enjoyed this conversation, even though it's shorter than it was intended. But have a wonderful day, and we'll see you again.
Thank you so much. And thank you to the men leading the marches tomorrow. We need good men to lead.
Well, thank you.